This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to the Be Live OrangeBloods.com postgame show. Anwar Richardson in Lawrence, Kansas. Jeff Ketchum at home in Cedar Park watching today a horrible Fox Sports crew do what turned out to be. The crew was perfect for the game. There wasn't a lot pretty. It was a game with a lot of mixed results, as I kind of outlined in my instant analysis of the game. But the bottom line is Texas beats Kansas 24-14 to advance to, well, I guess 17 in the end. They had to fend off that final onside kick after the 45-yard field goal. Regardless, Texas holds on in Lawrence. They advance to the Big 12 championship game to face either West Virginia or Oklahoma in a game that later on tonight essentially is a de facto Big 12 semifinal. And it is the biggest game of Kyler Murray and Will Greer's collegiate careers before the winner has the next biggest game of their careers. But Anwar, it was a game where Sam Ehlinger probably, in my mind, shouldn't have played. If you knowing what we now know, Sam wasn't good today. He was never right. It may have been a combination of the injury, a combination of he didn't throw a lot this week, a combination of Kansas did some, I think, smart things to this Texas offense. But the offense struggles. The defense was dominant for three quarters. And then Texas did that thing that it does in the fourth quarters of games this year, where it takes what looks to be a comfortable win and makes it a little less comfortable. But they held on. And there's there are people calling on Anwar for us to besiege Tom Herman after the game with questions about why didn't you challenge certain calls that didn't get reviewed in the stadium? And there was, why is your hands team on kickoffs look so bad? And like there's all these little nitpicks. But at the end of the day, for me, this is a big picture game. Longhorns finished 9-3. They're playing in the Big 12 championship game. Today was one of those by any means necessary kind of deals. Win by one, win by 50. The end thing, the end result is that you play in Dallas next week or in Arlington at Jerry World. We can nitpick what it means that some of these things happen today. But at the end of the day, this is a pretty monumental step forward for a Texas football program that hasn't played in a Big 12 championship game in 9 years.
Yeah, Ketch, it goes back to one of the points that I've been making, you know, for weeks, which is style points don't matter. It's kind of been like my running theme, you know, for the past few weeks, is that by hook or crook, Texas just has to win. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about a 9-3 Texas team. And you will be able to, the narrative in the offseason will be much different than it is right now, Ketch, because everyone will look in the offseason. And what is the offseason all about? It's all about saying, you know what? You could have won this game. You could have won that game. You know, could have easily been 10 wins or 11 games.
That's what bad teams do. When you're good, you don't have to do that.
Correct. And look, they're only going to really, really have to do that for about three games. And you know, at the end of the day, it's ugly. Like, you look at this, you say 24-17, Kansas. Ugh. I mean, it's not pretty. It's not impressive. But, Ketch, we're going to think about this game for 4 hours, right? When's the kickoff? At 7 o'clock?
Dude, this game's already in my rearview mirror. I don't ever want to see a highlight. You can show me the Jeffrey McCulloch interception. I'll watch that on a loop. There really wasn't much else from this game. I wanted to tweet out at one point, like, man, I feel bad for Alex.
Because
this is a look ahead week times 100, and you know, he'll be breaking down film for 2, 3, 4 days of this. And it's just, nobody should ever have to watch it twice. Not even the Texas coaches. Like, burn the film.
No one's going to read it. Like, Alex is going to put forward a lot of effort for stuff that no one's going to care about.
40 hours for the offensive line breakdown of the Kansas game. I almost want to tell Alex, is there anything? But he's got to finish the deal, right? You can't go 11 games into the season and then suddenly have incomplete data. But my goodness, it just, Let's start with Sam. Let me give you the numbers on WAR, because it was, I thought, you know, he's Texas comes out and they go 2-3 and outs on defense. They have a 98-yard touchdown drive to open things up. And it just felt like it was the perfect start. Sam Ellinger on the first drive of the game was 6 of 7 for 81 yards and a touchdown. It's a 230.1 rating. That's good. That's real good. For the rest of the game, Sam was 10 of 21 for 73 yards, a touchdown, and 2 interceptions. Could have been 3. His quarterback rating was 73.6, which would be awful in the NFL, let alone in a sport where a really good quarterback rating is 100 points higher. In fact, Sam was coming off, if you include the last game where he only played a half, he played 3 straight games of a quarterback rating of higher than 75 in each of those games. No Texas quarterback has ever done that before. Today, a quarterback rating 100 points lower. He was never in a rhythm. He missed a couple of should have been touchdowns. The interceptions weren't great. He had 10 games, 40 quarters in between interceptions. So you tip your cap for an outrageous streak. But it was good enough today because Kansas isn't good. And it won't be good enough in a week. And I think the big talking point from this game is that the Sam Ellinger that performed today, for whatever the reasons were, that wasn't good enough for what Texas will need to do next week. And so the key talking point all week long will simply be, and maybe you don't even know until Saturday, what does Sam Ellinger look like next Saturday at Jerry World? Because what he played at today wasn't good enough. And I don't want to put it all on the injury, but it does reveal the fragile state that this team lives in when, you know, this team kind of goes as Sam Ellinger goes. And when he was really good against Oklahoma, they won. When he was really good against West Virginia, he put that team in a position to win a game against a top 10 type team, top 15. When he's not really good on WAR, and he wasn't today, you can let a Kansas stick around or a Baylor stick around or an Oklahoma State. You know what I mean? Like this mm-hmm. Texas team, Tom Herman, I think, admits it when he says things like we're ahead of schedule. It's because there is a little bit of a fine line between this Texas team being Big 12 championship game worthy and its foundation probably needing to get stronger across the board outside of the quarterback position.
I mean, here's the thing. I think my man Ben Garcia raised a point that I was going to raise, which is as much as Sam struggles, I think there's a huge possibility that Texas loses if Shane is playing. Like, I just, you know, to me, 75% of Sam is probably better than 100%.
But he wasn't at 75 today. Like, what do we think he was at?
I mean, I would go 75. Because he's able to run and run in a touchdown. So, I mean, he still had a little bit of that. He did take a couple of, you know, hits where you're like, okay, he got back up pretty quickly.
That's one of the worst performances of his career. I mean, it's so the final numbers are easily the worst of the season. I have to go back and look like how many were really as bad as this one. It wasn't good. And you and I are on the same page with the, if Sam is 75%, you play him over 100% Bouchel for all the reasons that you mentioned, right? I mean, his legs weren't hurt and they did prove to be critical a few times in this game. I don't know. I think you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, because this, I was right. This was a game where 28 points would be enough. Texas didn't need to be in a track meet and Sam got enough to get the win. And so you can't really second guess it too much because it did work. And I feel you on Shane. I just think accuracy was a problem today.
Hold on, can I say something? Craig Mack, who says, if Shane plays, we win this handily. Craig, did you see Shane in the other games this season? I mean, you didn't win anything handily when he's been in the game. We saw him score, what was it, 7 points?
He was perfect a week ago, and he scored 7 points.
Yeah, so, like, I hate to interrupt you, but, like, Craig, don't go with that narrative. Don't go with that narrative.
But, I mean, there is something. Look, Sam Ehlinger at 75% is getting the ball more to little Jordan Humphrey than once in the first half, once in the second half. Now, and here's where I think next. If Matthew Truer words have never been spoken, right before we went on, like that's what Anwar was talking about, that the 180 difference between 2016 in Lawrence, Kansas versus 2018 in Lawrence, Kansas, light years. Yes,
I covered a difference. Funeral. I covered a funeral to 2016.
It's the difference between a funeral and a New Year's Eve party. So, you know.
Yes, yes.
If it wasn't Sam, I don't want to say it was the injury, because I don't know that. Like, it could have just been that was a small piece of it. It could have been that he was rusty from not having, you know, my concern about Sam in this game, when you have a quarterback with that type of injury, is that, you know, usually in the beginning of the game, they're hot and they can. That's if they're going to throw the ball down the field, that's when they can do it. And then by the time you get to the fourth quarter, fatigue sets in because they haven't had that amount of workload that they would take over four quarters throughout the rest of the week. So I kind of expected Sam to be better early than he was late, but after that first drive, he was dreadful. I mean, I think the rest of the first half, he completed 13 yards worth of passes. And the second half wasn't much better. Again, he had two picks, one in the red zone, one right to a guy, another ball that could have been intercepted that was right to a guy. Like, he made some – I don't want to put that on the injury. He threw a couple of balls today that were bad mental decisions. So, I don't know. All I know is that you have to play Sam next week. So it doesn't matter like what they should have done today. It worked. Next week, Sam just has to be better. And I think whoever they play, Anwar, we're going to see. Kansas did today what I was saying Texas should have done to Iowa State a week ago, and what Texas Tech should have done to little Jordan Humphrey 2 weeks ago, which is, man, you can beat us with Devin Duvernay today. You can beat us with whoever the hell else you want to beat us. But little Jordan's not going to beat us today. And they bracketed him. He had attention everywhere he went. And Texas had a really difficult time getting him the ball. And the Texas offense today, not able to get little Jordan the ball, we saw what that meant, that it becomes a very much watered down version of the offense. And that's before you factor in how healthy Sam Ehlinger was. I think next week, if you're either of those two teams, you go, Sam didn't really push the ball down the field real well today. Wasn't accurate when he went down the field. They were at their best when they nickel and dimed it, which is kind of what Bouchel does. So you could absolutely say that Ehlinger was as good as Bouchel, and he added a run threat, because the underneath stuff is what Shane can give you, and Sam could still give you that. But if I'm one of these two teams next week, I'm playing my defense in a – I mean, Oklahoma can't play defense anyway, so why the hell not? Just play it in a phone booth, put a ton of attention towards little Jordan Humphrey, and dare Texas to go down the field and make Sam Ehlinger make the kind of throws that I think are harder to make when you're battling that kind of an injury. So, you know, like, I don't mean to be negative, because, again, the biggest thing to come out of this game is hallelujah, Texas is going to the Big 12 championship game. It was just an ominous performance given the magnitude of what's on the line next week. A championship, the kind of thing that you can hang a banner in your facility at the end of the season and say, Big 12 champions, that's what's on the line next week. And they just have to be so much better on offense than they were today.
Yeah, but the great part is, catch, I mean, this, as you would look at that Kansas offense and you would say, that was pretty putrid. It's like you weren't really impressed. And that team put up 500 plus yards against Oklahoma.
How did that happen? I watched that whole game today on War, and I was like, I don't get it. I don't get how you can play so piss poor that they scored 40 on offense against you.
That's just, you know, that team is, I mean, it's a bad offensive team. Like, that quarterback from what everyone to say about Sam, like, this Peyton Bender guy completed 18 of 35 for what, a buck 59, a touchdown, and he was sacked 3 times. I mean, he himself was bad. So, you know, we'll talk about who's a better matchup for Texas, you know, I'm sure later on in the podcast, but to your point, they will have to play better offensively. I mean, this is one of those things, but here's the only thing is, and this is what Tom Herman talked about after the game and why they feel a little bit more confident is, look, they got into a track meet with Oklahoma and they threw up 48 and they were in position to win against West Virginia and did not. Now, here's the only thing, and this is maybe the positive for Texas, is all of a sudden over the past 2 weeks, the Texas defense have shown up again. Now, you lose, they lose Gary Johnson. You say, okay, what the hell is going to happen? And by the way, we still don't know the specifics of what he did to get the one game suspension. We'll be working on that this weekend. But
congratulations, though. He's a new father.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, congratulations. Shout out to his baby mama. I think he did a shout out to her on Twitter or something weird. But then you put a Jeffrey McCullough, and he comes up with the biggest play of the game. You know, he gets when Sam gets that, you know, has that turnover and they're right there in the red zone, you're like, uh-oh, they could make this into a one possession game. And Jeffrey McCullough comes up with that interception, tips it to himself, and then returns it for 65 yards. And it's huge. It's huge. And you, as a guy who's been a huge Chris Boyd defender throughout the season, I mean, we saw Chris Boyd a couple of times, but we wasn't seeing people doing anything against Chris Boyd. I mean, Chris Boyd was locking down his side where there was just not, it was not a factor. Charles Omenihu has been playing on a different level for the last couple of weeks. So the benefit is, I don't think Texas can win games with like they did last year with just their defense and their defensive loan, especially we're talking about Oklahoma, especially we're talking about West Virginia, because they're going to put up points. You just got to acknowledge that. But for some reason, if this defense can play a little bit better than it did in those previous two games, still with the offense playing on all, you know, clicking on all cylinders. And I'll be honest with you, Ketch, it was a dreary day out here in Lawrence. I mean, it's cold. It's overcast. Like, it's hard.
There are like 500 people in the stands. 500
There's no band here. And I think Texas, at the end of the day, knew they could play their C game and still be better than this team. You know, you play sports and you know you're just better than someone. You're just like, all right, finally, you play basketball. You're like, all right, let's go ahead and just turn it on and get it over with so we can leave. And Kansas did make it interesting at the end, especially with that onside kick. But I think if the defense can play better, we know what the offense can do. And we know what the offense can do against, especially if Oklahoma wins. I mean, we know that it's just wide open. Now it's just a matter of defense stepping up.
A couple of thoughts. One, you know, we're not giving, and I think this is really important, we're not giving the defense yet enough kudos for what really, well, like a week ago, Kansas scored 40 in Norman and had, what, 500 yards of offense. And a week later, in the last game of David Beatty's career. So Kansas came ready to play today. It wasn't what the Kansas performance was because they're not good and they didn't execute very well. It was a lot like the Kansas State game. Texas goes up 21-0, and then it just didn't quite close out the game. And they were never in danger of losing the game per se. But like Tulsa, like Kansas State, and now like Kansas, I think that those games all had a common theme, which was Texas was clearly better than all three teams. They got up to a certain point in the second half. And, you know, again, they did that fourth quarter thing where they just didn't close. But I don't know that that matters for next week. Texas plays up, and it does play down to its competition. They're going to play a really difficult opponent next week. I expect them to play well. I don't know that we can say that we can assume that the offense next week will hit on all cylinders. Because the defenses they're playing will beg them to be hitting on all cylinders. But this same Kansas defense was wretched a week ago. The difference between their performance this week and last week was that Kyler Murray was Herculean last week against them, and Sam Ellinger was less so. And if you tell me, look, if you tell me going into the game that Sam Ellinger has like a 112 quarterback rating, I actually think Texas loses the game today. They didn't. So great thing. If you tell me next week that Sam's 160 or above, like I think Texas wins the game. The problem is none of us are going to know whether or not the Sam Ellinger that plays in Jerry World next week. We just don't know going in how effective he's going to be able to be. He's the key to that game and how he goes, this team will go, because they will need 40-ish next week. No offense to a Texas defense that's playing better. I would put the Bender kid in the category of guys that this Texas defense chews up like Popeye on spinach. You give Todd Orlando and this defense below average quarterback play to play against, and they've been phenomenal actually this year. Like you think about TCU and USC and Kansas State, now Kansas. I mean, a week ago, Iowa State. Now that was actually a really good quarterback that they did that to, but not a wide open offense. I think next week is a week where you're going to need 35 plus points. And I don't know that the Sam Ellinger that played today, the Sam Ellinger that played today, it wouldn't have mattered who Texas was playing. They weren't going to be good on offense because Sam just wasn't good today. So next week, the story is, can he be better? But I think the point you make about the defense, Anwar, is an astute one, because you'd think that this defense is getting a little better. I thought everybody today was good. I thought Aminahue was good. I thought that I thought Anthony Wheeler was good. I thought Jeffrey McCulloch had the game of his career. That is the Jeffrey McCulloch that Texas thought it was getting when they landed him in recruiting 3 years ago. He was a difference maker. I think Craig Mack brings up Joseph Asai. He's been really good the last two games, so much so that I found myself wondering why he hadn't played earlier. Like, that guy's been really good. Why did it take 10 weeks to get him on the field for extended action? Thought everybody in the secondary was good. You brought up Chris Boyd. I thought Caden Stearns. I thought B.J. Foster outside of the face mask late in the game. I thought he was really good. I thought Brandon Jones, before he took a brutal shot on special teams, I thought Brandon Jones was having maybe the best game of his season early on. Like Brandon Jones set the tone for the entire game on the first play of the game when that little running back for Kansas, who's really good, tried to get to the perimeter, and Brandon Jones snuffed that out. I think it was around a 4-yard loss, and it set the tone, like three and out, the Texas defense really suffocating. I have a feeling, whereas I feel for Alex Dunlap looking at the film, I think Todd Orlando will look at the film with his players the first three quarters and say, there's a lot of good here. If we can just keep building on the last 7 out of 8 quarters, and there were actually good things in the fourth quarter today. They just gave up a couple of scores, but some of that had to do with special teams. If you're Todd Orlando, you have hope. I think you have your players' attention that they can succeed, whereas they were running on fumes, it felt like, a couple of weeks ago.
No, I totally agree. All right, so let me ask you a question, Ketch. We're a couple hours away from the kickoff from this evening.
Yes.
Which team do you think, because Tom Herman says he doesn't care who they play, right? He says it doesn't matter to them because he feels like they beat Oklahoma already and they were really close against West Virginia. So he feels like they can compete with either one. But if it's you and you had to wave the magic wand or shake the crystal ball, which team is a better matchup for Texas?
The team that doesn't have Kyler Murray on it. Will Greer's not Kyler Murray. I mean, I've seen Texas play both this year. And with all due respect for Will Greer, who's a phenomenal college football player, he really is. You could make the case that Kyler Murray's been the best player in college football this year. Texas played against him really, really well. I don't think Kyler Murray's a perfect football player, but I wouldn't want to play Kyler Murray again. And you know what? We see it in the NFL all the time. Usually it's when a team plays a division team in the playoffs. I can remember in 2007, the year the Giants won the Super Bowl, and they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And you were at that game, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The David Tyree.
Well, people forget about the circumstances of that. But the divisional playoff game round that year, that was the Tony Romo and Jason Witten went to Mexico, went to Cancun week, mm-hmm. when they had the week mm-hmm. off. And they had really dominated the Giants, or clearly outplayed them the first two times they played them. But then they had to play them a third time. And you hear guys in the NFL say all the time, like, oh, it's so hard to beat a team three times in a season. I'll use the same logic in the college football in next week's scenario, and that beating Oklahoma a second time feels like it'll be the more difficult task over beating West Virginia just once. And, you know, I'm sure if West Virginia were to advance, they would look at Texas and say, oh man, we had to beat this team a second time. And the first time it took everything we had, including a gutsy go for it on a 2-point conversion. Will I write Kyler into speech into the Football Hall of Fame? Like, I don't know what that means, but if the season ended like right this moment, Kyler Murray would have this greatest single season passing efficiency number in the history of the sport. Like, forgive me. Like, no, Ben, you cannot suggest that I'm some sort of Kyler Murray homer. Like, you can't do that. But you have to be able to acknowledge, if you're asking me who the more dangerous opponent is, I'm going to pick the team that has the least dangerous player on it. And there's nobody on West Virginia's team that to me comes within a 10-foot pole of Kyler Murray in an indoor setting on a artificial surface. It's not where I want to play that dude a second time, in my opinion.
I mean, he's pretty good. But basically what you're saying is you're ahead. You're playing poker. You're ahead. Get off the table. Like, that's what it sounds like you're saying. Like, you're ahead.
No, I feel like you're asking me to pick between who I want to go heads up with mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in, you know, two. It's like I just because I beat Phil Ivey at the poker table heads up once doesn't mean that I want Phil Ivey a second time if I can avoid somebody who's not as good at poker as Phil Ivey is. Yeah. And I just I have a healthy amount of respect for Kyler Murray. I think Texas beat him fair and square. I think Texas beat him fair and square, what, 2 months ago, 6 weeks, 7 weeks ago, because Sam Ehlinger outplayed Kyler Murray. What I'm concerned about as a guy covering the Longhorns today, the Sam Ehlinger that we saw today would not beat an Oklahoma-led team today. They wouldn't. Oklahoma would have put up Oklahoma makes you play a racetrack game. And I need to know that Sam Ehlinger is at least better than 75% to pick Texas in a rematch against Oklahoma. So I just, you know, like I don't think it's a like, here's the thing is though, Anwar, I will answer. Is that Syed?
Anzani. I don't know how to
Anzani
pronounce
Anzani is the one.
Anzani,
we'll call him SA.
You know, I don't know how to pronounce this first. I apologize.
Is it Sahad?
It could be Sahad. That would be it. I don't know if the J is like an H. I don't know how it's pronounced, but we're not being disrespectful.
No, no. I think it's. I'm actually curious. I don't want to be a doofus and say it completely jacked up.
Maybe write it out for us so we know how to pronounce it. You know, please. So we will give you your respect.
As both Jeff with a G and Anwar, both yes. of us have names that have been yes. horribly butchered over yes. our lifetimes. So I promise, like, we just want to get the name right. So about the Oklahoma thing. So I don't mind addressing this on the podcast. For those that missed it, on Monday, there's a guy over at Sooner Scoop that it's like their video guy. And I had a tweet on Saturday that said that at the Sam Ehlinger of the moment was playing as well as anybody in the Big 12. Weirdly, like 48 hours later, a guy from Sooner Scoop replied back that, I don't know, I can't even remember how it started. I needed a hug or somebody to talk to, and he would always be there. And, you know, like I thought two rivals guys. I met the guy. He's a nice enough guy. I've never had any issues with him. Like, I thought we were just good-naturedly going back and forth. And I wasn't taking any of it seriously. I still don't. Like, man, I'm way too busy the week of Thanksgiving with 4-year-old twins and a mom that was moving. And, oh, by the way, Texas playing for a Big 12 championship game. And we're doing all the stuff over at the Yak. Like, I just didn't have time to deal with four string dudes over at Sooner Scoop. But he wanted to, like, use that as a moment to, like, boost his profile. Like, I'm a get after it with Ketch. I mean, if he feels like he got that out of that, then right on for him. I just, you know, there's like a couple of guys on that website that matter, and I don't view him as one of them. Like, he's one of those guys when I see at a rivals conference, I think, why are you here with the rest of the adults? But like, you know, he does good work with the video stuff. He's a funny dude. Like, just not a big deal. And it's weird because, like, Ben says, I killed the guy with the small penis comeback. Like, I thought we were just joking. Like, I thought we were just joking. As someone that had the Billy Lucci dust up from just a few years ago written about in a story on The Athletic this year. Like, I'm not trying to get into feuds online with people several notches below me on the totem pole. Like, never swing down. And, I just didn't think it was a big deal.
Throw slight shade, but you know, it's weird that like the people at the Sooner Scoop, because it's weird because they're in the Rivals network, but they really like attack us, because I remember I've seen guys on their message board before, like a couple of years ago. I met a guy who worked for Sooner Scoop, and I thought we were cool and yeah. And we were good. I saw him at a game and this and that, and then someone said something to me, they're like, hey, you know, this guy's talking about you. I'm like, what are you talking about? And they send it to me. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird, because I thought we were cool. But I really think that the Sooner Scoop people really become old, super, super fans. And I know people think we're fans, so I get that. But they go to the fandom thing where they really are blowing, their fan base. Well,
I don't even know that I would go quite that far, because look, here's the hierarchy of that site for me. Josh McQuishan is like their Jason Sukumel, like their recruiting guy and everything. And I think Josh is as good as anybody in the network. Like, I think he does a great job at Sooner Scoop. Kerry Murdoch is, I guess, the Jeff Ketchum of that website to a certain degree. Like, I think he's the publisher, I think. And like, he and I don't get along great, but like, we have mutual respect, I think, for each other. I just think everybody else that they have is like, you know, for a mid-level rival site, like those are the main two guys. And I think Kerry does good work. And I think Josh is excellent. And
But Ketch, don't let me ask you to say this. if you, as the boss and the publisher, if you allow your employees to engage in that type of action, then you're endorsing it. So you wouldn't let us just go random at folks, you know, just for no reason. So that's what it seemed like. They're kind of sort of co-signing on it.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I'm just saying that I don't view them even if Texas plays Oklahoma next week. Like, I don't have any issues with it. At the end of the day, I don't even really have an issue with Eddie. I thought that it was kind of funny, but then he just wouldn't let it go. And it was like, I thought it was a funny, weird little response. But then I realized, like, oh, you're even more than just trying to be funny. Like, you're trying to, like, use me as a get-over attempt. And, like, I'm not even thinking of, like, I don't respect you enough on that level to engage with you in that way, I guess, was my feeling. And I let it go, other than a few barbs, like, passive-aggressive barbs in this thing right here. It's not a big deal. All right, yes. But, hey. People asked about it, so I don't run from that stuff. Like, really, I'll address.
He asked about your relationship with Kyler Murray.
Who did?
Anzani, the person that we still don't know how to pronounce. That's how. Yeah, you got to address something else.
So the Kyler Murray. I just don't like Kyler Murray as a human being, but I think he is a phenomenal college football player. Like, he is he's the guy that you create on the PlayStation, right? Where you're in franchise mode on NCAA football and you go to create a player, you probably make him a little taller, but he's got the speed, He's got the playmaking ability. Kyler Murray's fun to watch as a football player. I just don't like his attitude. I mean, you know, did Sam Ellinger need to get suspended this season for missing meetings? Like, that's like part of his character. And like, you know, all things being equal, I'd probably, as a football player, rather have a badass quarterback than somebody who's on time for all the meetings. If I had to choose, give me the guy that's Heisman good and I'll put up with what comes with it. But I don't have to choose. I can sit back and watch the whole thing and say he can be great on the field and still. So Sajad, right?
Yeah, he said pronounce the J's. So
Sajad. And it's not like Spanish. We wouldn't roll the J's. So it's just like a, like almost as if there's one J, I'm guessing, right? Because you can't, there's no like extra roll of the J. So it's just Sajad. Sajad Anzani?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Okay. So you know, Sajad, it's cool. So, yeah, people call me Anwar all the time. So, and I'm like, actually, it's Anwar. So
my family calls me Geoff, and they've known me for like 15 years now. So, you know, like I'm just Geoff, even though my name is Jeff. So believe me, Sajad, I do have appreciation for getting the name right. And if I'm still, for some reason, not pronouncing it correctly, feel free to correct me. You know, look, I think that going back to the topic at hand, I think West Virginia, this would be fascinating. Ketch, would you like him more if he committed to Texas versus Aggies? I dreaded. Look, Kyler Murray coming to Texas would have been, Charlie Strong would still have a job, I think. Potentially, maybe that's too much. I think Kyler Murray would be the starting quarterback over Sam Ellinger if they were at school together, because I think Sam got really, really good into this season, but I don't know if he would have had that opportunity if Kyler Murray had been on the Texas. Like, Kyler Murray is exceptional. I dreaded the idea of covering that dude as an athlete, that just having to just, you know, all of it. I dreaded it. Like, but, you know, I don't have to choose between Texas and Texas A&M. He chose to go to Texas A&M. It didn't work out. He went to Oklahoma and he's had a phenomenal year. And, oh, it's Persian. Cool. I once dated a girl who was Persian and she was so, she was just really nice.
She was smoking.
She was smoking, yeah. But I don't think that was because she was Persian. Like, I'm sure Persian women are like all women.
It helped them.
Well, you know, every group of women has good looking women. Yeah. I'm just saying the only Persian
woman. Some have higher percentages than others, though.
The only Persian woman that I've ever dated was really, really nice. I liked her. She was, you know, a positive memory in the memory banks of women that I've dated in the history of my life. That's all I'm saying.
You got rid of her?
Yeah. She worked down south.
What's south? Hutto?
Sutto's not south. Hutto's like south of Waco, yes, I guess. No, she worked off of Ben White. So she lived south, and I'm a Cedar Park guy. And
your wife was in Houston when you met her. What are you talking about?
She moved to Austin.
So you're telling me all she had to do was move 5 or 8 miles for you?
No, I was younger too. I was in my 20s.
Oh, okay.
Heather met me. You were holding on. 29, 30. I was a little bit.
Yeah.
I was. Yeah. She deserved better than me. Ultimately, I was a nice guy, but not nice enough.
Yeah. No, we get that. Okay. Got it. We see the boat pictures. We already know what time it is.
But mentally, I have to admit, like, the Ben White thing was a turnoff. I don't really date women south of Lake Austin. Just saying.
That is so funny. Kind of
my thing. Enough north of the river to not have to worry about going south of the river. What else do we got? Let me ask you this. if I say, who's your game MVPs? If Miley Cyrus was Persian, Jeff would be dead. There's like a lot of follow-ups there. I'm not going to make any of them. Anwar, hey, Ben, when I was in game shape, I was a little bit of a heartbreaker for like 5 years of my life, but not really beyond that out of 42 years. your MVPs today, because I've got one that I have a name that we haven't even mentioned yet that I think's a game MVP for me, but I want yours.
So if I want to go with the obvious, which is going to be McCullough, right? I want to state that. By the way, I've just been a bunch of people keep asking about Brandon Jones in our conversation, our chat. It's still too early to know anything about him, and you know, it's game just ended. They'll have to go through everything, check him out in concussion protocol. He said he'll have to see he's going to be in a concussion protocol, but come on. I mean, that guy is going Don't to have play. To go. Yeah, and how more than likely he will, but boy, you.
I mean, we saw a concussion situation just a couple of weeks ago. You know, they never confirmed it as a concussion, and then it turned out there was no protocol either. Like, he just went back to practice.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that one was kind of weird. You know, I thought overall, I thought, you know, I'm just looking through the numbers. I thought Caden Stearns played really, really well. You know, PJ Locke was off and on. He was kind of hot and cold, you know, for me. And, you know, where he dropped the interception and missed a couple of tackles. So, you know, I think he stepped up, you know, at the end when it counted. But, man, if you're just looking for just one guy, for me, it's going to be harder to – You know, I don't know if I go
past I got one. Color. You haven't said it yet. You haven't said it yet.
All right, then you go ahead and give it to me.
I think I got to give an attaboy to Trey Watson today. Oh. As a guy that has been very pro Keontae Ingram, pro putting Keontae Ingram in a position to be the starter and the lead guy. Today, Trey Watson was the MVP of the offense. I mean, he averaged five. He did what Keontae Ingram has done in a lot of games, and he did it the same time Keontae Ingram kind of played a Trey Watson game, which was Keontae averaged 3.9 yards per carry. More times than not, that's kind of been the thing that Trey Watson has been doing. Today, Trey Watson ran hard. Today, there were a few like chain moving plays where Trey Watson we're showing the stats here. It's not quite coming into focus.
Yeah, it's pretty horrific. It's pretty horrific effort on my part. But if you could see it, I was going to show that he was averaging 5.6 to carry.
5.6. 83 yards?
80 yards. So 14 carries, 80 yards, 5.6 to carry with his longest of 31 yards.
I thought Trey Watson was – I mean, I thought he was the best player on offense. I thought that – Boy, that Texas offensive line, I can name one good player on it. And then there are times when I feel like I'm watching, I thought Elijah Rodriguez had some rough moments today. I thought Zach Shackelford had some rough moments today. I thought Calvin Anderson had a couple of rough moments today. I don't feel like I ever call out Sam Cosmi's name, which is amazing. And that's the type of thing that Connor Williams used to do as a young player. Like a game would end. And he would go, well, the rest of the line sucked, but Connor did his thing. I feel like that Sam Cosmi as well. And I don't remember Sam Cosmi having one of those plays that resulted in a sack or something like that. But the rest of the guys today, Kansas got them a little bit. You know, it's hard to point to the offense today. It's weird. Look, they couldn't get Lil Jordan the ball. They couldn't get Colin Johnson the ball. And the guy they were getting the ball, Devin Duvernay, in the first drive was like three catches for 47 yards or something like that. And then he disappeared. So just a really – if you're Texas, you just have to hope today's a one-off. You have to hope that Sam will be better next week and the issues that they had in terms of getting their playmakers the ball, that it's just a one-week deal. And it's quite possible. Like, that could be the thing. It could be another week is just what Sam needs. But I would say if you're Tom Herman, bring in the witch doctors, bring in the acupuncturists, bring in everybody. The Calvary comes in this week. They've got to find a way to get their best player, Sam Ehlinger, as close to 100% as possible while also letting him get enough work that he's not showing up on Saturday in the Big 12 championship game hoping to magically – show up in a rhythm when he just didn't get potentially a full workload during the week. I just wonder how much that was the issue today, that Sam was limited. It was a short week. They didn't have their full allotment of, I think, preparation time. And I think it clearly made a difference. And again, you just wonder how much of a difference it makes it a week from now, actually 8 days from now. And maybe that's an important point, because this week they had 6 days to get ready and it wasn't enough, but next week they have eight, and it might prove that those extra 24, 48 hours makes all the difference in the world.
I totally agree with you. And I want you to keep talking, because there's like some Russian bot in here. Like, it's just like fucking up our show. I don't know what this guy keeps posting, but
we have a bot. Let me see one of the little cartoon character looking thing.
Yeah. Like, it's totally like some, I mean, we're not running an election here, man. We're just freaking, we're just doing a post game show. Like,
stop. And I vowed to not talk politics for the rest of the year. So even, see, normally maybe the Russian bot shows up because I have a rep, but I'm like a week into my promise or 2 weeks into my promise, I've been good. I haven't commented on anything.
You've been doing a very good job. I mean,
but I do see like the cartoon character thing. I see that. I don't know what that's about.
Like, I don't get it. And I just trying to, I was able to easily block someone last week, but this one is not as, hold on one sec. I think I can, if I do this.
Go away, Russian bot.
Yes, it's just,
he's still making comments.
It's just annoying as hell. I'm trying to figure out how to do. You keep talking for a moment.
Would think that they would sneak in a few fuck yous or something like that, right? Like, if you're gonna go to the problem, like all the trouble of just spamming the chat,
mm-hmm,
you think
mm-hmm.
they'd at least get in some hardcore, you know, darts at us as people. Yeah, the bots are really letting me down. I have higher expectations for trolls than that. Other things from this game today.
I got it. I got the delete. I got him. We're good. We're good.
Going on where I thought you. I thought you had the tweet of the day today.
Which was
the one about David Beatty, basically in the final game of his tenure, coaching like a guy who hadn't lost his job, and he coached today like he had something to lose. And I don't like, I'm not saying you have to win the game with trick plays, but I'll even point to, they had the ball under 2 minutes to go in the second quarter. They actually started moving the ball and they got to midfield and they're down 7-0. And I thought David Beatty played to go in 7-0. There's mm-hmm. less than a minute and they're trying to run the ball. And like, no, you got to go. This is the Big 12. You can't be like 0 points at the half. That's cool. Because Texas was getting the ball first in the third quarter. So Texas didn't score on its first drive, but that's what Tom Herman likes to do. Tom likes to try to get the last possession of the first half. It's a Belichick thing, right? And then you want to get the last possession of the first half and the first possession of the third quarter, and you can create some distance by sneaking in that extra possession. Texas had that in its hip pocket. And I thought if you were David Beatty, you have to try to get points going into halftime, because if you don't, the next time you get the ball, it might be midway through the third quarter and you might be down 14-0 and the game could effectively be over. I thought Tom Herman's good friend David Beatty did him a very good solid today, because a more aggressive Kansas on offense, which they started to do in the fourth quarter out of bare necessity, could have changed the dynamics of what happened today.
You know what I think? You know, this is what I believe had happened at the end of the day, Ketch. I think David Beatty did not want to take risks because David Beatty didn't want to have the score run up on him in his final game. And I don't think David Beatty wanted to do anything that would have Texas drop a 40 spot or 50 spot, and that's how people remember him. I think he wanted to be so conservative and keep it close so he could say, look, my last game against Oklahoma, it was close and we scored 40. We have put up 500 yards on offense. We lost against Texas. It was only, a few points against Texas. So when he goes to his next employer, he's not going to show an ass kicking on his.
You mean Tom Herman?
I mean Beatty.
No, I know.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I don't know. I mean, unless he's going to be a. You know, I don't see him as a coach. I can see him as one of those, what do they call those guys who kind of, what is Nick Saban?
I can see him as a coach.
I see him as a consultant.
I see him as a consultant. boy, they sweet talked each other this week, didn't they?
Yeah.
Like they made a point to talk about how friendly they are, and they go back to the Rice days, and coaches like to hire their friends, is what I'm saying. And David Beatty would be a good hire at Texas because clearly he's got some chops as a coach that was able, you know, to get into a head coaching position at a major conference. But he is known as a good recruiter. He's a guy that's worked the state of Texas, had success everywhere he's been. So I think that I can see a Maringer. No, I don't mean to call anybody out on the day that they lose the big, you know, on the day that the entire staff wins a Big 12 championship. But if we're going to keep it real, Derek Wareheim is a guy that I think is viewed as, if he were one of those sheep in Africa and the lions were coming for the sheep, like he'd be the guy on the staff that would get eaten by the lions. So I think if you have a chance to upgrade, look, Tom Herman learned his lesson for me in the offseason. Get rid of, you know, Wareheim. Because I don't think Wareheim's on staff if they don't move the coach. Like he was going to have to hire Herb Hand. So the 10th coach allowed for Wareheim to get bumped to inside receivers. You know, I would view David Beatty on the staff as an upgrade of Derek Wareheim, with all due respect to Derek Wareheim, who is a solid recruiter. But if you're Tom Herman and you can upgrade your staff, I think you have to. And I think David Beatty, to me, is somebody we're absolutely going to have to watch in the offseason. It just makes a ton of sense.
No, it does make sense. Now, it does make sense from a recruiting standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, and because it's his friend, right? Like you said, I mean, you haven't heard since you've been here Tom Herman over the last 2 years talk about guys who are his friends.
I didn't even know Tom had friends.
He seems to be a guy that just keeps to himself and just kind of does his own thing. And the fact that he's like, that's my friend, that's my dude, says like, okay, all right, all right. It could be a possibility in the future. Definitely something that you need to watch, because I don't foresee him getting a head coaching job anytime soon.
No, and the question would be, would a guy who has been a head coach and he's got money and he got fired, so it's not like he has to work, does he come back for a position job? That I don't know. If you're David Beatty and you go from head coach to position coach, that's a bad career move. Even if you get to work with your friend, even if you're at Texas, because quite frankly, there'd be a lot of people that'd be like, why in the hell is David Beatty the receivers coach and not the offensive coordinator over Tim Beck? But that's an entirely different podcast. We may do that. We will have that conversation, I'm sure, during the weeks that follow when we're looking for things to talk about. And can we get on the Cliff for offensive coordinator bandwagon? I don't think Cliff Kingsbury does what Tom Herman wants to do as an offense. Like, I don't think Tom Herman would essentially be saying, the way I prefer my offense to look and operate is wrong. So I'm going to bring in Cliff Kingsbury because his offensive ideology is better than mine. Like, that's not happening. That is not happening. So I think everybody can forget the Cliff Kingsbury stuff ever. John 2 Cole says, so Zach Smith wasn't Tom Herman's best friend. Honestly, I don't mean to, like, the only thing I would say is that Zach Smith's like the only dude in coaching that I've heard that Herman was friends with. Like, that is to the greater point of Herman is in the show business and not in the show friends business. In terms of, as far as I can tell, ain't nobody at Ohio State trying to claim Tom as one of their guys. On the contrary, we've seen Urban Meyer deliver some sharp sticks. You know, Tom Herman's a young guy that has fast forwarded. He's been on a fast track to the head coaching job at a place like Texas. And I'm guessing there are a lot of coaches in college football that feel like, how the hell did he pull that off? Like, he's in less than 5 years, he's gone from new coordinator at Ohio State to second year coach at Texas. I'm guessing that probably does rub some coaches off in the wrong way, because they're all bitter little bitches sometimes. Did David Beatty ever go to a club with Herman? You know, I wouldn't discount it. Like, they're all younger coaches do younger coaching things. Yeah, and I just get the sense that Tom Herman at 42 isn't doing the same things that he did when he was a young coach at Rice. You know, just a thought, just throwing that out there.
So let's do this, Ketch. You know,
you got any more questions?
Let's just do one more thing.
Okay.
Let's do one more and then we'll wrap it up on this. And I'll go first and then I'll get your take on it. Now that the regular season is over and we know there's a Big 12 championship ahead, so that gives, do we know they got two more games left in the season?
Yep.
Putting 9-3 in perspective for Tom Herman in the second year. You know, so we're talking about 7-6 last year. A jump up to 9-3. I would have to go back and look at our predictions from prior to the season. I think we were in like the 8 win range, if I'm correct. I don't think I went as far as 9. I think Dustin may have gone 9, if I'm correct. But putting it into perspective, I'll just give you my view. I want to get your view. For me, it's a hell of an accomplishment considering he's taken a group of guys who did not know how to win, who were, for the most part, losers until he got here, who was having to deal with Charlie Strong, as you called him, the Michael Scott of coaching, and having to deal with the constant turnover, the constant change in staff, to just be clearly learned when it was all said and done that all the things we thought about, that former strength and conditioning coach, I forget his name right now, was just hype because we realized how weak these guys were going through.
Pat Moore, yes.
Oh my gosh. And then basically getting through all the bullshit of last season and then having to deal with a bunch of guys who still, for the most part, didn't know how to win. And getting them to 9-3 with the potential to for 10, even 11. I mean, after Maryland catch, it was like people were like, holy shit. People starting to think, like, what the hell? And then after Tulsa, it was like, whoa, this may not be it. And at the end of the year, right where we stand right now, when someone asks them about how far away does the Maryland game seem, and you say ions away, it seems like it is one of the better turnarounds this season from a coach as far as getting a team there. But give me your thought of where this team is in year two and what Tom Herman's been able to do from a coaching perspective.
Well, let me say, first of all, I give Tim Beck and clearly Tom Herman a ton of credit. Today aside, the offense has made amazing strides forward. And those two, the job that those two guys have done with Sam Ehlinger has made this season possible. Because Lil Jordan Humphrey and Sam Ehlinger are truly the two true difference makers that this team has that are kind of been next level for big pieces of this season. The season, Tom Herman said it, they haven't won anything yet. So the Big 12 isn't as good this year as it was a year ago, as good as it's been in some recent years. So this was a year to be pretty good and have a chance to make it. And Texas has made it into a Big 12 championship game. I'm remembering Texas playing in Big 12 championship games in 1999 against Nebraska in a game that the highlight in San Antonio was Bevo taking his shit on the field as they exited Bevo out of the stadium. That actually happened in the end zone. That was about as the best thing that happened for Texas in a game. They were just outclassed. I'm remembering Texas in the 2001 Big 12 championship game, where if they win the game and they got off to a hot start, they would have played in the national championship game against Miami, and then Colorado wins the game. When you make it to a Big 12 championship game, even if it's one you haven't played in 9 years, losing the game changes the way people feel about the way a season went. So I think the way I would answer how do I view this season and the job that the coaches have done in playing in that game versus winning the game, it's a big deal. It's the difference between, no matter what happens in the bowl game, being able to say this was an A-plus, absolute grand slam of a season because you won a conference championship. And for me, at a program like Texas, that's the bare minimum for how you define success in any given year. And I think the bar drops somewhat because they haven't been good in a long, long time. But that ultimately is, they don't write books. They don't tell fairy tale stories. They don't talk 5 years later about seasons that don't end without championships. So this next game truly defines what we call this season. But in making three games of improvement in the regular season, they've taken, I think, a monumental step forward. Like, it's a big step forward. The problem is Texas had to go from bad to not bad. They had to be bad to just not terrible. And that happened a year ago. And then the jump had to be from Texas being not terrible to good. And I think they took that step this year. And I think Texas had to make the step from good to very good in a lot of weeks. And they, I think, have taken that step, even though they haven't been very good every week. But Texas isn't great, and Texas isn't a champion yet. Texas is they're in the pretty good to very good range. And so I think that is where he has Texas in year two, which is where, when you hire Tom Herman, you would have said that's where Texas needs to be after year two. They maybe don't need to be winning a championship, but even Tom Herman would say, we want to get to November and be in the mix. And that's what they've been this year. And now they're there. And I think that it's a big step forward, but the most difficult steps to take are oftentimes that step from very good to great. And when Texas played in the Big 12 championship game in 1999, in what was Mack Brown's second season, just like Tom Herman this year, they played that game and he didn't win a Big 12 championship for six seasons. You go back to 2000, so they go back two seasons later in 2001, and they could have been playing for a national championship. And instead, they lose that game against Colorado. They go to the Holiday Bowl, and they don't play in another Big 12 championship game for 4 years. So Mack Brown didn't win his first Big 12 championship until season number seven. So when we look at what Tom Herman has done, I look at them having taken a monumental step forward, but the next step is the one that historically has been more difficult to pull off. And when they do, and they can call themselves champions, I think you can safely say that something terrific has been accomplished. This is a really, really good accomplishment, but the words great won't quite come out of my mouth just yet.
If they lose in the Big 12 championship game, but win the bowl game and finish with 10 wins, 10-4, how would you view it?
Very, very good. Maybe even damn good. 10 wins in a bowl, a 10-win season, playing in the Big 12 championship game, winning your bowl is a damn good season. It's not great, though.
But you'll take damn good over horrifically bad? 7 out of 7, won't you?
Well, I thought Tom Herman failed as a coach a year ago. I didn't think he did a good job. You know, 6-6 in the regular season, winning the bowl game, going 7-6. That wasn't good enough, just being completely honest. This is a season, though, where you've seen improvement in a lot of critics. Like, this has been a very good – even if they lose the next two games, it'll have been a very good season, even going 9-5. They can still make it great, though. And I think that's the headline. The headline is Texas has a chance – to be a championship ball club in year number two, but it's not hand grades and horseshoes. Close won't be remembered as anything other than failure. And the downside to playing Oklahoma in the championship game is if you lose to them in a Big 12 championship game, that game in Dallas is rendered pointless.
Yeah, it's the last thing that people remember. So I totally agree with you. I want you to do one more, but I think maybe for me, Ketch, because I've covered mostly bad teams here, you me having the opportunity to cover nine, I'm like, this is awesome.
Like, if there's an onward curve on this, like, that's fair, man. Like,
yeah,
it's all about, I'm looking at 19, I'm looking at historically the Texas program, and you're looking at historically, man, I've covered some really, really bad teams that would have thrown parades for 9-3.
Yeah, so you remember you, one of the things I thought you always said to me, that's always been funny to me, is that during the Mac Brown years, he would come to the off-season events with a 10-win season, and people would feel like that wasn't enough and just be upset about that. And I'm like, you greedy bastards, because do you even realize what's going on? So I want to – let me answer Franklin's thing, and I want to go back so let's do two things. Because Chris wants to know about recruiting. He's been really patient. I haven't gotten a lot of his comments on, so I want you at least to address that. Franklin has asked me about the Texas Bowl potential. Texas Bowl will be the floor, Franklin, just so you know. It will be the floor with the bowl games, more than likely. With nine wins, I take it back. Not Texas Bowl. Shit on that. Alamo Bowl. Alamo Bowl is the floor. I apologize. Alamo Bowl was the floor, absolute floor. You're looking at Sugar Bowl as a very likely one. Peach Bowl is also going to be one that's going to be on the table. At the very least, it will be Alamo Bowl, but it won't be anything lower than the Alamo Bowl. So no. just so you know. So then let's go back to the recruiting thing, and then we'll let you wrap it up from there, Ketch.
I don't think today impacts recruiting, other than, like, from a big picture statement, you know, Texas gets to say, you know, what playing in a Big 12 championship game allows Tom Herman to more safely and confidently walk into a recruit's home and say, you know, everybody, every new coach, Jimbo Fisher's doing this at A&M. He's pitching early on in his tenure. We're going to win a championship. We're going to win a championship. Come play for us. We're going to play young guys. We're going to, you guys can be the class that changes everything. And take a look at Charlie Strong, right? 6-6 in that first year, and loses and goes 6-7. And that next year, like, they were able to sell in that 2015 class with Malik Jefferson and a lot of the senior class of today. They were able to sell that pretty easily. And even in year number two, they were able to sell this vision that they were headed somewhere. The problem is there's a shelf life on how long you're able to say that before eventually people want to see results. And I take Tom Herman, in terms of recruiting, they've certifiably accomplished what they're talking about. They're going to play for a championship. If they lose next weekend, they're going to go into every recruit's living room and they're going to sit in front of them and say, man, we're close. We're almost there. Well, we don't have players like you that can quite get us over the hump. And I think that works. I think that resonates. You know, the danger would be is if for any reason there, you know, you just have, if you're not moving forward, then you're moving backwards by definition, because staying put is moving backwards. And I think that you will see Jimbo Fisher have this next year, where if they don't do better than 7-5 or 8-4, there will be questions. There will be, is this really any different than what we've seen in the past? And I think with Tom Herman and getting to play in a Big 12 championship game in year two, even by not winning it, I think it solidifies what their larger message is. I don't think it impacts any one recruit. I don't think there's one guy that watched the game today that's saying, oh, now I'm definitely coming to Texas. Recruiting is one of those deals where if the principals keep their integrity, then you're in good shape. And I think the principles of Tom Herman's message are 100% sturdy. And I think that that's a really important thing. And I think that recruits look at much bigger picture things than what happens in any one game. Like, if Texas plays Oklahoma next week, like, I don't know that that has any impact on any kid in 2019 recruiting. It might have a little impact on 2020, but kids just don't view recruiting through that prism. They view it through 24 to 36 month relationships. They view it through the prism of, Will a coach get fired while I'm on campus? Will position coaches be moving? Can I play early? Like, there are all of these things that matter. I think you just got to keep your pitch rock solid. And that's what Tom Herman and his staff have been able to do. So that makes what they've done on the field this year an absolute touchdown in terms of recruiting and maintaining message.
Two things for Dustin, and I want to go because I want to go back to recruiting. Fiesta Bowl still would I would still leaning towards the you know again the three that I mentioned. Sugar is going to be one. Peach is going to be another. Alamo is going to be probably at the very last bowl. I mean, that's assuming they probably lose. If they lose, I would probably put them in the Alamo Bowl. I think that you could probably you know make your reservations as far as that go. People have been asked about just two things: Brew McCoy. And I got one last thing. Let's wrap it up because everyone's asking about Brew. So that kind of lit up like a Christmas tree when you started talking recruiting.
I mean, I think we have to wait and see what happens. I think the Brew McCoy recruitment is still kind of hanging in the balance. And I think what we see from a USC perspective, what they do, I think greatly matters. And I don't know. Like, I don't know that you – there are guys – I look at Brew McCoy as one of these guys that may not know what he knows until he knows it. And I don't know that I personally can say that he knows it yet. So I think you just got to let that one play out a little bit. But Texas is in great shape. Yeah, I mean, I think it's as simple as that. I think you just, you know, you just got to be a little more patient with this thing. And I do think that Noah Cain is a guy that, you know, I would crystal ball to Texas. I don't know about Brew McCoy yet. That's one I'm a little, I'm not quite as sold on, but I think I would be surprised if Noah Cain doesn't end up at Texas at this point. I think that would be a big disappointment. I think that would be one that weirdly went sideways on Texas when it doesn't appear that there's a reason for it to go sideways. So I'm more than a little bit glasses half full. I think the glass is like three quarters full. But I think with as it relates to Brew McCoy, I don't think the big wild card has been played yet. And I think, you know, until we see what the wild card is, I have a hard time. Look, for instance, if Chris Peterson gets the SC job, I don't know what that does. Like, I don't. That could be huge. That could be, you know, yeah. So, you know, like I need to wait and see what it is that they do. But there's no way anybody at USC keeps their job. Clay Helton, look, Jonathan, you think his last name is Shelton, which is kind of the problem because you can't. Does differentiate Blake Shelton from Clay Helton. That's why USC has to make a change at the end of the year. And just think of it like this. When Texas got rid of Charlie, right? The hope. And when A&M, it's really tough to do. Like, this is where I would say, if you wanted to go, your cup isn't 75% full, but it's 84% full, just to stay away from the 85 number. You know, we learned with Herman and with Jimbo Fisher. And Fisher was a splash hire, but Fisher's recruiting, it was, again, recruits make decisions these days off of 24-month relationships. And what USC's new head coach will have to do, and I give him an opportunity to potentially pull it off, and I'll just wrap it up real quick and say this. What he'll have to do is that thing that Tom Herman had a hard time doing and Jimbo Fisher had a hard time doing in their first 30 to 45 days. It's hard to make a kid forget a 24-month relationship with another staff based off of 15 minutes with the new guy. It's just really difficult. So barring USC making a hire that is so game-changing that we just all look at each other and go, oh, damn, that just happened. And then you kind of shoulder shrug because you're like, man, maybe that kid will stay home. Like, I think Texas is in a really, really good position. I just think, you know, history says you just got to be patient and let that thing play out a little bit more. And I think you'll know, but we're not there yet. And I think it would be very naive to believe that Texas could not end up with Brew McCoy, because out-of-state kids are the toughest to pull. And, you know, I feel like that kid's looking for reasons to stay close to home. If USC can't provide them, then I think that kid will be a Longhorn.
All right, Ketch, a couple of things. Just want to address a couple of quick questions. Craig Mack wanted to know the difference between the Alamo and Texas Bowl. Really simple. So when you start looking at Big 12 Bowl stuff, you know, whoever, if you have a team from the Big 12 that's going to compete in the CFP, you know, that team goes there. Another team gets slotted probably in the New Year's Six. After that, then comes the assignment of bowls that Texas, you know, the Big 12 has, you know, relationships with. Alamo would be the more prestigious and the biggest payout. Texas Bowl is actually third on the list. So it would be Texas Bowl, Camping World Bowl in Orlando. Then comes the Texas Bowl in Houston. So that's why Texas has been able to get in as a six-win team, and that's why the Alamo Bowl has passed on Texas with six or seven wins, because they want better teams because it's a better payout. So even if Texas is down around the road, they've still have passed on Texas. Jonathan Cole, first national signing day, December or January, Ketch?
December.
Okay. And I think we got that. My computer's about to die. Last thing, Ketch, give us all the promos for the Yak, and give us Orange Bloods for Black Friday and everything else.
Well, I didn't get the Yak stuff ready by today. And I realized I didn't want to compete with the game. Like, the focus today was on the game. But both on Monday, the plan will be on Cyber Monday, both for Orange Bloods and for the Yak to have incredibly special offers. I don't want to completely reveal what we're doing with the Yak, but if you know a serviceman, if you know a teacher, if you know a first responder, we're absolutely going to take care of those guys in ways that any of those people that you know in your life, you can give them a pretty cool Christmas present. We also are making a special offer as it relates to all of our Orange Blood subscribers. So if you haven't yet joined the Yak, we're going to make you an offer that I hope is just too hard for you to turn down, because the content's really, really good. And I actually believe that once we get out of the season, I think the content's going to be even better, because we're somewhat restricted by the in-game nature of talking, of playing the hits, talking about we can do more special podcasts similar to the Mac Brown ones that I think I've done the last couple of weeks. And same thing, Anthony, veterans as well. Anybody who has been in the service, current or former, will be doing special for anybody who has service experience. Anthony Bailey asking, what about veterans? Absolutely. So, you'll want to check it out on Monday. As far as Orange Bloods is concerned, it is the $99 gear promotion. So if you sign up for an annual subscription, and you're a new subscriber, it's for new subscribers only. All new subscribers can, if they sign up for a year, get free $99 worth of gear from Rivals. So from a Christmas standpoint, you can essentially pay for your subscription and also get like free presents for your family or yourself. Thank you, Ben. Ben says you get a lot of shit for the Yak, but I have loved it. Y'all keep it up. Completely worth it. Ben, I'm looking at your photo. You're probably closer to the demographic of our target audience than maybe an older Ben Webb. Like, Ben Webb's father may not quite fall into our key demo.
But Ben looks Ben perfect. Father. Ben Webb's father wants a transcript of the show. Of a show.
Yes.
Yes. I'm like, you've never seen a radio show transcribe. Like, what are you asking us for?
Well, they're asking for transcripts, so, because that's what they know.
It's never happened.
No, what's funny is I did transcribe one of our early podcasts, because we have a program that can do that, and like, nobody read it. I was like, I'm giving you what you just asked for, and then you didn't read it. So I'm not going to do transcripts. It's like, nobody's going to read them. But no, everybody, the gear, the $99 gear promo is the thing that the subscribers Will the Yak fix my autocorrect issue from Helton to Shelton? Jonathan, all we can do is try. We'll try, but I wouldn't, you know, hold out. We're working on the app. And as soon as we're done with the app, we will, you know, move on to that whole, you know, autocorrect issues on the Be Live chat. Look, man, for Anwar, who's in Lawrence and it's not quite dark, get back to Kansas City, man. Enjoy your night. Safe travels the rest of the weekend. We're all going to go watch Oklahoma and West Virginia. Chris Burns asked real quick, who wins Oklahoma, West Virginia? Oklahoma.
Yeah, I won't bet against him. I won't bet against Kyler.
I don't ever remember West Virginia beating Oklahoma in one of these games. I remember these games being in the 60s and the 50s, and that kind of, like, I think it's going to be 58-55.
That's the game of the century. Maybe it's the game of the year, potentially. But game of the year.
The Texas-Oklahoma game, it may not be a team coming back from 21 tonight. I think there won't be a lot of defense. This is the biggest game in Morgantown, maybe in the history of that program. Maybe that's hyperbole, right? Because they played Notre Dame for the national championship, back in 88, 89. But in the last couple of decades, this is as big of a game as West Virginia has hosted. National television, night game, chance to go to the conference championship, chance for Will Greer to have a Heisman, not Heisman winning moment, but a get there to the Heisman ceremony type of moment. If he can outshine Kyler Murray, on the opposite of that, Kyler Murray's entire season is rendered worthless if they don't win tonight. If Kyler Murray has the greatest statistical season in the history of college football, but he loses the two biggest games on that schedule and they don't make it to the Big 12 championship game, Kyler Murray, as crazy as it sounds to say it, will have had a bad year. And because of that, I think Oklahoma wins tonight.
All right. My battery's about to die. Catch.
Bye-bye, everybody. We'll talk to you this week. The game should be fun tonight. Next week's game has a chance to be even better. Thank you, Linda Burnett. We appreciate you guys hanging in there and watching this with us, as we've done it every single week this season. We'll do it again next week. Until then, you guys be safe. Have a great weekend. Later.